Saving money on your next project now at Menards. Menards is the leading supplier of quality roof and floor trusses. Choose from our large selection of residential and post-frame trusses or design custom trusses specifically for your project. Get started on your building project today, in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, view our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms.
It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. Once again, this week is no exception. Today, we're going to talk about kind of the different stages of aging. And I think this is a really good show for guys because our special guest is Kenneth Lackritz, PhD. He's written a really wonderful book called Remembering Self, Seasons of the Soul, Rediscovered Through Mystical Experience and Depth Psychology. It's really about how to really go back and peel the layers away and learn and rediscover who you really are. And I think that's important, particularly for us boomer guys out there, because throughout our lives, we're kind of told by the cultural narrative, well, you're this age and here's your role, and you're that age and here's your role, and eventually you're too old, get out of the way. Well, it doesn't have to be that way. And I'm sure you or you have friends, if you are a boomer, know a lot of different folks who really define themselves via their job and their wallet, if you will. So we're going to get into that and a lot more. It's really like, you know, what if midlife isn't a crisis, but it's a spiritual awakening? So I think you're going to enjoy my conversation with Dr. Ken Lackritz right here on Guys Guys Radio.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio, it is the interview portion of our show. And hey, you know, guys, when we talk about growth, we usually focus on achievement, career, relationships, money, status. But what happens when life asks us to go deeper? What happens when the soul starts calling louder than the ego? Sometimes that's a good thing. My guest tonight is clinical psychologist, Jungian analyst, and author Kenneth R. Lackritz, PhD, whose powerful new book, Remembering Self, Guidance for the Labyrinth of Life and Beyond, explores the psychological and spiritual journey through midlife, elderhood, and we'll get into that, identity, attachment, soul evolution, and what it really means to become whole. That's a big task, but we're going to get into it. We're going to talk about mind, body, spirit, Jung, shadow work, the four seasons of life, and the mysterious guide at the center of the book, Shima. So welcome to Guys Guys Radio, Dr. Kenneth Lackritz, PhD. How are you, doctor?
I'm doing well this morning. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
Fantastic. So why do you think, doctor, so many successful people reach midlife feeling disconnected restless or spiritually empty, despite having it all. You know, a lot of guys, particularly in the boomer era, and I would take a chance and say you're probably you're just about in the boomer age. I'm a boomer, and I know so many of my friends. Their identity is tethered to their position. A lot of them won't retire. They don't need the money. They like to put the tie on and get on the train and go to work. And they just won't let it go. I think a lot of it's about power and identity and money and comfort and fear and all of the rest. But you're the Jungian psychoanalyst here. So tell us what we need to know.
Well, you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to begin with a history lesson.
Okay.
Because I think that we can't fully understand where we are without understanding history. And what history has brought us to, particularly in the modern era, and we're kind of in a postmodernist time, is it's brought us into a peak differentiation of the ego from the ground of self or from the ground of being. And you could say, if you looked at it pictorially, that the ego is kind of at high noon in terms of its separation from the self. Now, what happens when it reaches high noon is we find ourselves in a period of alienation from the ground of who we are. And symptoms start to emerge at that point, which starts to take us into midlife. But what happens is people find themselves so identified with the ego because they think that that's who they are. They think that that's all there is, that they're very resistant to make these kinds of shifts that we think are appropriate second half of life shifts. But why would we make a shift like that if we think this is who we are and the ground of being is so silent, it is so distant, it's so detached, that we in the modern era believe that there's nothing to shift into?
Amazing. So, you know, Jung, who you studied extensively, spoke about individuation, the process of becoming whole. How does your book, Remembering Self, expand upon or personalize that concept?
So what I try to do in the book is bring it into a story. Because I think that a story, particularly, and this is about a figure named Shema, who is at the end of his life. He's 93 years old, and he's reviewing his life, and he's able to see from a transcendent lens and also from a very immanent personal lens, and he's able to trace his life back. Now, what we see when we trace our lives back is we see the growth of the ego, which is an unfolding and a differentiating process. It is not about wholeness per se. It's about leaving a ground of unconscious, undifferentiated wholeness. It's about developing an articulated personality that functions in the human matrix of life, you know, that builds attachments to their lives, attachments to their identity, that becomes a student and a son or a daughter, eventually an adult and someone who can function in the adult world, hopefully. And that's the whole idea of building a solid vessel of ego, is that we can actually function in a world and build a structure in that world through career and marriage and family that can hold the depth of the task of adulthood. Now, through the story, what we find is that there's a phase in midlife. And we go through many transitional phases throughout life, but there's a phase of midlife in which the structure begins to collapse. And when the structure collapses, we begin searching in the kind of the dry soil for some new meaning. But it's very difficult to find at the level of ego, because the true source of meaning is the connection to the ground of being that we have spent our entire first half of life leaving, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to that point and we go through what the alchemists call it's a solvent phase or a dissolution phase, not disillusion, but dissolution, which means for things to kind of begin to dissolve and loosen up. And we start to get glimpses at what's underneath. And what we move from a what I think of as a descending phase, which is we're descending into the body, into the life, incarnating fully into the human identity. And then what happens is we start shifting into what some believe is an ascension phase. And this ascension phase is emergence of the ground. It's emergence of the self. Now, when the self begins to emerge and wants to begin to have a central role in identity and in life, there has to be an integrative process, and some would call it reintegration. Okay, and this is what Jung talked a great deal about in individuation, is individuation means to be undivided. But what happens is we spend the first half of our life dividing. Okay, and we divide into many dimensions of who we are. And through this dividing process, we actually become so alienated from self for a lot of reasons, because the identity can't hold everything. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing in the second half of life is we're beginning to recollect, not just memory recollection. That's part of it. And that's why the remembering title is there. But we start to remember, and we start to recollect all of the dimensions and pieces and parts of self that have been split off and abandoned. And we start to move toward an undivided state, okay, which is what Jung, what many talk about is wholeness. And that's what individuation is. It means to be undivided.
Okay. My special guest on this week's Guys Radio, Dr. Kenneth R. Lakritz, PhD, the book, I'm holding it up right here for your YouTube and Rumble viewers, Remembering Self, Seasons of the Soul Rediscovered Through Mystical Experience and Depth Psychology. So this process and path that you're describing, Doctor, is this something that is specific to our Western culture, or is this a universal concept?
You know, it's definitely a universal concept, because what we if you look collectively throughout history, and, you know, independent of geography, what we saw during the period of 800 BC to about 500, you know, AD, is we saw what we call the first axial age. And the first axial age happened everywhere in the known world at once. It was a very mysterious process. It's when philosophy and religion started to emerge. And this was the first step in the differentiation of the ego and the kind of the birth of the ego from the self, where it began to start, we began reflecting on ourselves. So there was actually two dimensions. Mm-hmm. There's the ground of being, and there's the reflecting ego, which is an extension of this ground of being, was born from this ground of being. And it's a, what some would call an organ of the psyche. Mm-hmm. And so being the first stage, what we've seen throughout Western civilization in particular, is we've seen constant differentiation up until the period of about 1900, where collectively we were going through the same process of this differentiation that we now go through in the first half of life. Okay, so this was happening everywhere all at once. And so different cultures looked at this differentiation and this separation from unity differently. They had different names for it. They had different processes. But I think that Jung and the Western, movement of psychology, which really began during the 1900s and the 20th century, was, I think, an attempt to make our way back through the consulting room, you know, through the clinic, to the ground of who we are. Now, other religions have done that through, Buddhism has done that through meditation. Other religions have had many different ways. Yoga, the yogic tradition had different, their way of making their way back to the ground of being. In the West, we have looked at it from kind of a psychiatric and psychological point of view, where we see it as a clinical process to make our way back. Mm-hmm. To this unity.
So it sounds like, since all the cultures go through the same thing, and From my perspective, we're given roles. We're given a narrative by our culture, which basically is, as kind of you described, you're a student at a certain age, and then you're the worker, and you're learning things. And that creates some type of ego comfort for us. That vessel starts to get filled up. But then it gets becomes can become too much because we're relying on the narrative to define who we are. There must be a balance there that we can find. So instead of waiting until you're eldering, if you will, to figure all of this out or having that life-changing incident happen that you start to look at things differently, what can people do on their path so they don't fall victim, in quotes, to the narrative and can be who they want to be, yet kind of blend in with the culture?
That's a beautiful question, because when you think about balance, in some ways you have to defer to the psyche and how it provides that balance. You know, we could say, oh, gee, I want that balance. But what happens is during the midlife process and transition, you know, the psyche is trying to restore balance. And what it does is as the self naturally starts emerging, or reemerging consciously, then what happens is if the identity or the ego identity is too rigid, it presents itself. Every effort for the psyche to reconnect, again, you know, we're talking mm-hmm. about recollection, we're talking about reconnection, it presents itself in modern day as symptoms. So during Freud's era, there are particular types of symptoms that were presented. Today we see other kinds of symptoms. Everybody has anxiety, everybody has depression, you know, everybody's diagnosing themselves. But basically what these symptoms are is the psyche's attempt to communicate to the, you know, the egoic identity that there is something, there's a need for reconnection. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is people are oftentimes overwhelmed by these symptoms. They come in, they, you know, if they're ignored, they present themselves physically after a while. This is what Freud called symptom compromises. In other words, what happened is rather than coming up in direct awareness, it makes a compromise and it presents maybe as a chronic illness. And so we look at these symptoms in, you know, modern day medicine, psychology oftentimes interprets these symptoms very concretely, and they try to address them. They try to ameliorate the symptoms. They try to treat the symptoms. Rather than understanding, I think, what Jung understood, and I think what many mystics understand, which is this is the self's process of emergence and communication from a deeper layer of the psyche that maybe we don't understand very well. And it is attempting to integrate and to expand into consciousness. And if we don't have methodologies to midwife this expansion and this integration, what happens is it stays very much at the symptomatic level. It doesn't really begin to manifest as conscious change and transformation.
So how can we help the next generations coming up so they don't have to mirror the same path and the problems along the path, the challenges? Is there a way to kind of work around these things? Or can we teach the kids today not to fall victim to, you know, they need to be part of the culture, but, you know, this is a little saying like, you watch too much news. If you don't watch the news, you're uninformed. If you watch the news, you're misinformed. So how do we teach our young people to be able to come up in a way that's different than what we did and be able to kind of identify who they are and what's important at an earlier stage versus kind of the boomers now? And some of them don't even get it now because they're still, I mean, listen, some people can still enjoy working their traditional corporate jobs in their 70s. But they like mm-hmm. to do that. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be more than that. It seems to be a self-identifier.
Well, do you mind if I go deeper than the question?
Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, we're entering what some would call a second axial age. Okay. The first axial age was 2,500 years ago. We're actually entering the second axial age. And what this is it's an ascension phase. Okay. What we're talking about with emergence. And so it requires a different model, a different way of thinking. And so what I would say about this time is it's a little bit like changing, Copernicus's view that, the sun revolved around the earth, mm-hmm. And that Galileo took forward, in shifting the heliocentric view. And I think in some ways we have a kind of an egocentric view mm-hmm. of psychology. Psychology has been, it starts at the ego and it works down. So it's we begin there. We need a view that's more self-centric. Okay, and so I think the second axial age is bringing us into a kind of a new myth, mm-hmm. Which Jung called the myth of individuation, which is a more self-involved view. And that our process is not just to support the ego. It's not just to continue to do what we can to to augment our coping with many toxic conditions that we're in, but to actually begin to use technologies that connect us directly with self and nurture, encourage, and midwife this integration. And there's a lot that's going on in that regard. But again, it requires a new model, a new kind of psychology, and a new kind of thinking. And so I think we're even going beyond the Jungian thinking. We've seen transpersonal psychology emerge, which goes even further beyond Jung into what some people call the unitive dimension. We see integrative psychedelic integrated psychotherapy that's emerging is a very, very powerful force in both healing, awakening, and therapy, and within the frame of what some people would call depth psychotherapy. We're also seeing, what some would call, quantum approaches, because there are many that believe that the self or the unitary dimension is actually a quantum dimension. It operates on a very different physics than the ego. From my point of view, the ego and the way we think about it operates much more from the old Newtonian model, which is a deterministic, very linear model. As you move into the Jungian model, and this is something that your viewers may find very interesting, is that Jung was actually a contemporary of Einstein and Wolfgang Pauli. And he used to have dinners with Einstein. And this was between 1908 and 1912. And they would talk a great deal about the theory of relativity and its relationship to what he called synchronicity. And synchronicity from the Jungian view is really looking at the causal relationship, but he called it acausal, not causal, the relationship between consciousness and matter. And this is what the physicists are talking about with quantum entanglement at this point. So you're seeing quantum therapies, the regression hypnotherapies that are connecting people on deep levels with this quantum field. It's very similar to the psychedelic therapies. There's energy, body work. There's a lot of different approaches that are coming into the clinical field that I use very integratively in my practice. I have a village of practitioners that I bring in to assist me in opening up this quantum field and then helping me to do the integration in a psychotherapeutic process. So it's a different model of thinking. Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. Okay, my special guest once again, Dr. Kenneth Lakritz, the book Remembering mm-hmm. Self. So in the book, you blend spirituality, psychology, mythology, and personal development. Why was it important to kind of bridge all those worlds?
Because all of those worlds are the psyche. I think what we've done is we've artificially separated them into metaphysics and physics and psychology and metapsychology and spiritual psychology. they're not separate. They're just different fields of consciousness. And one of the great Jungians, Eric Neumann, who was a protege of Jung's, looked at the psyche as encompassing three basic fields. And one field is the physical reality field, the other, the archetypal field, and the third, the unitary reality field. Mm-hmm. Now, what happens is, you know, as we go back to what I was discussing earlier in the first half of life, is all of these fields become separated. They become differentiated, and we become actually alienated from the archetypal and the unitary reality field. But they're all part of the psyche. There's nothing that isn't self. There's nothing that isn't psyche. But we think we are in the physical reality field, and we think that's us, and we think that's the end point. Okay? So this book brings into a unified model and a unified way of thinking all of the fields in a way that hopefully talks about it as just differentiated parts of the oneness, the mm-hmm. unity. And so I felt it was extremely important to show how during the lifespan this unfolds, and then in the second half of life, how it starts to come back together again. You see, mm-hmm. we de-link, or we never de-link. Let me correct that. We're always linked. We're just unconsciously linked. Okay. And then the second half of life, we have an opportunity to consciously relink. And this is an incredibly important part of the unfolding during the seasons of life and the lifespan. These are the opportunities and windows that open up.
Now, in the book, you talk about four stages of life and the importance of versus eldering versus aging. And I think that's very relevant for a lot of our boomer audience out there. And a lot of people like myself or yourself or like my friends mm-hmm. who are, some of them are still working, some of them aren't. And I think they're all wrestling with, is that all there is? Talk to us about how the book addresses this target group, if you will, and how they can navigate some of these challenges in layman's terms. What can the boomers today
do? Okay, so now we get into layman's terms.
Yeah.
So, you know, an elder is someone that is connected with who they are. Okay, who knows the ground of who they are, who has remembered and relinked. And they can become a lighthouse to others who are searching for this path. And they can also become initiators and midwives. And so the eldering role is an incredibly important role to welcome others who are seeking transformation into deeper and more integrated ways of being. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's different than an older. An older is someone who is still identified with their pre-midlife identity. Mm-hmm. And they're the ones that maybe never retire, that never want to give up. It's like the myth of Sisyphus, where he refuses to die. And so he puts death in jail and then ends up rolling the rock up and down the hill for all eternity, which is basically a way of saying, I refuse to give up my ego identity.
Now, what happens to some of these folks? I mean, a lot of them, maybe they're happy because they like what they're doing. And it just seems to me a little bit dysfunctional because these are narratives that we've been given. At a certain point, you don't have to do that anymore. Yet they choose to go and do it again and again and again. And then at a certain point, I've got to think they're going to wake up and say, oh, there's all this other stuff. I remember when I was in my 30s, I was living in New York City, and I actually had to be between jobs. And I'd never not worked since I was like mm-hmm. 7 years old. And I had a paper route, or 9 years old, paper route. And I was outside one day, I was walking along the West Side, and I couldn't believe how many people were outside. I'm like, how could these people not all be in offices? I've been in an office for like 10, 15 years straight now. And I couldn't believe it. Yet there's a whole other world out there. How does that relate to this challenge that I think a lot of boomers have, where some of them don't want to let go because of ego, and some of them don't want to let go because of fear and money issues or whatever, because they keep spending and they have the more and more expensive toys. I know I have two different friends. One guy, he loves to go to work. loves to put the tie on, feels really good. The other one likes to spend money. He likes his stuff and he keeps working too. And I'm like, I watch them with love because I want the best outcome for both of them. But I'm sure that's a microcosm of so many other people out there. And then I have a lot of other folks that I know that have kind of, they're semi-retired or retired, whatever. And they seem a little more at peace with themselves.
Well, you and I are old enough to see, to have noticed how much longer people are living.
Yeah.
You know, you look back even 40 years ago, people were old in their 60s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's 60 now. You and I, you're in your 70s, I'm 68. We don't think of it as old. Okay, so at the beginning of the 20th century, the average lifespan was like 40.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is, you know, the model for life was a 40-year life. You know, all the Hindu stages of student, householder, forest dweller, elder, that was all done in 30 or 40 years. Now what's happening is it's spread out over 80 or 90 years, but there's no model for the second half of life, especially in the Western culture. There's you know, where do you find models for transitioning into elderhood? Maybe in India there is.
Exactly.
You know, there are other places where people perhaps live longer and have these models, but we don't.
Right. And the culture doesn't support it either.
The culture doesn't support it.
They want get out of the way. They're not saying be a lighthouse. They're like, train your replacement and then here's a package, please.
Well, they're saying get out of the way and get a facelift. Right? You know, find a way to look like you're still in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, in the second half of life, there's another game. And most people don't know about it. And society at large does not value it. And so I think people find themselves, why would they want to move into a stage of life where people are invisible, you know, where they feel devalued, and they feel like there's no meaning and nothing to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's of importance and contribution.
Now, you work with a lot of boomers. I think I recall that from one of our conversations. Mm-hmm. In general terms, directionally speaking, what do they come to you with? What type of issues do they have? Obviously, everybody's different, but there's some universals there that, you know, the boomers are going to come to you with. What do you notice?
Well, you know, it depends on the boomer. Okay. But I think that, you know, as themes, what I see in midlife are people feeling like the things that used to have meaning no longer have meaning. The things that used to have juice no longer have juice. Am I depressed? You know, I'm anxious. I'm feeling a loss of motivation. You know, what's going on? And so, and I think that so many people think of it as depression, and they don't realize that they're in a normal process of development, and all of their symptoms are actually a sign of this transition and what I consider to be a potential for transformation. But what happens is, what people, from a psychiatric point of view, people are oftentimes, you know, this is when they start going on antidepressants. People start drinking more. You know, they start masking what I call the emergence more. And they're in a liminal space, which means they're in a transitional space from one state of being to another state of being that can take as long as 10 years for many people. And so it can be a period of suffering where your sense of reality and your sense of meaning in life is completely shattering and breaking down, but you have no understanding, first of all, of the process, and second of all, where it's taking you. And so as a therapist, if I am not further on the other side of that and understand what the process is and where it's taking us, then I'm of no use to that person. And I'm more likely to buy into the, you know, the cultural and medical model that you're depressed. Let's give you some therapies for depression. Let's support your ego. Let's pull you out of it. Let's get you in this and that and the other thing, without really attending to what is happening at the soul level. And so it's very important to begin to articulate that to this group so that they understand the nature of, and meaning of the of what we think of as symptoms.
Now, you also mentioned shadow work, and that's something that I don't think everybody understands really what shadow work is and why it's important, particularly for and people entering the eldering stages.
So what is shadow? You know, shadow is anything that is not acceptable to the consciousness of the psyche or aligns with our sense of who we are. So naturally what happens is anything that's not culturally aligned, personally aligned, it gets pushed, it gets either suppressed or repressed into the unconscious. And so what happens, again, you know, the soul wants to be whole. And so naturally the shadow material emerges at midlife, and it kind of smacks us right in the face. You know, we find ourselves very much in the mud, in the swamp of all of the issues that have been segregated off, dissociated, abandoned, rejected. And the shadow wants consciousness. It wants acceptance. It wants reintegration. And so when we talk about shadow work, what we're talking about is finding a relationship with all of the dimensions of ourselves. Again, going back to that model of the unitary psyche, all the dimensions of ourselves that want to be known, they want to be conscious, they want to be reintegrated, and they want to be received with love, you know? And so if we are not in a deep relationship with self, which is also a deep relationship with love, which is the foundation of who we are, it's very difficult to receive all of these abandoned elements of ourselves. So that's part of what we want to encourage in shadow work. And what is shadow to one person may be something fully acceptable to another person. Mm-hmm. To do this work, we have to find a way to be accepting and compassionate with all aspects of our being.
You also, in the book, Doctor, talk about the difference and the importance of building conscious partnerships versus romantic relationships. I do a lot of shows, and they're all about people over 50 dating mm-hmm. and looking mm-hmm. for relationships. And it's like, I can't believe like people still don't know how to date, but they struggle with it. And you know, we do everything we can on the shows I guest on to help them. And mm-hmm. you would think, well, wow, you know, because people they attract the same type of partners who were wrong for them over and over again. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they're looking for the romance. And at a certain point, maybe it's not about romance. Maybe it's about compatibility in a lot of different areas. So how do you discuss that in your book, Doctor?
We are in the first half of life driven, you know, our patterns are generally generated by early conditioning. And the early conditioning is familial. And we are replicating the patterns that we grew up with, replicating the patterns of our parents. And so we're basically in an unconscious relationship with our relationships. Mm-hmm. And so awakening to who we are allows us to begin to mediate, and it allows us to actually choose you know, ways of being that are not dictated by default by our conditioning. And so, again, going back to the notion of individuation, which is becoming whole, you know, oftentimes what we do is we're looking for someone who completes us. So we may be half of a whole.
Right.
All right. And in early relationships, what happens is we go through an individuation process where we start becoming whole together. But many people aren't able to do that in their marriages and in their relationships. And so they find sometimes post-divorce that they are doing their own personal individuation work, and they're coming back and they want to be two wholes in relationship rather than two halves becoming a whole. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, and these are conscious and awake relationships where people are actually building dynamics together consciously. They're choosing how they want to relate with each other rather than by default relating in terms of unconscious conditioned patterns. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I always say that each partner has to have their own life, and then you have a separate thing when you bring the two together. And that's really great. But depending on one person to define yourself is a mistake. And, you know, the title of your book says it all, Remembering Self. And it's, to me, everything I've learned about spirituality from all the thought leaders I've spoken to over the years, including yourself, which I think you've done a masterful job with it, is about rediscovering who we are, not looking externally for an answer. And that sometimes is the biggest challenge that people have, because they want to look out there and they don't want to look within, and they don't want to rediscover who they are. They don't realize that they are the answer.
You know, what's so important about what you're saying is that, you know, when we're born, we would not survive without the love from the other. So we through the first half of our life, we see the other as the source of this love. And that's the fundamental mistake that we make, because we start to realize over time that the other does not hold the key. The other may open up a door to ourselves, but they actually don't hold the key. And as long as we're still relying on the, what I call these horizontal ways of connecting, then what we're doing is we're making the fundamental mistake of holding the other person as responsible for our needs.
Right. You make me feel this way. Yeah.
Rather than us vertically, and this is the vertical relationship, realizing that all the resources live within us. But until we remember all these pieces, we don't have the connections necessary to be whole. And so we still keep relying on the other for that oxygen supply of love.
Amazing. And I've got to think that practices like meditation, and it could be, you know, you sit, do TM, or you go for a walk, or you go for a swim. Those are all forms of meditation. But trying to find the quiet times where you can give yourself the opportunity to go inside must be incredibly important, because we live in a very noisy world. And people who were around a couple of hundred years ago, they didn't have to deal with the noise that we have to deal with.
I think that that's absolutely true. You're creating spaces for ourselves to even listen into the subtlety, because the self is very subtle. And if we are not quiet, we can't hear it. We can't listen into it. We can't feel it. And I think meditation is one of the best ways of not only creating a quiet space, but quieting the mind enough to be able to perceive and experience the subtlety of being. And so I can't think of a better doorway into this process than meditation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're getting towards the end of the show, and you've done such a wonderful job with this book, Eldering Guidance. What are some of the maybe three tips that our audience can start to implement right away to get themselves in a position to be able to make the best of the remaining time that they have, and making those golden years the best years of their lives, which can very well could be, you know, you think about it. If you retire, let's say, quote unquote, at 60, and you're healthy, you're blessed to be healthy, you could live another 30 years, no problem. And you're free. Hopefully, if you've done some good moves financially and you're in that type of space, that those could be the most freeing, best years of your life.
You know, I think number one, we need to know that we have a self. Okay. And I think a lot of people don't know that there is a self, you know, beneath all of the layers of persona and ego identity. We have to know that. We have to work toward relinking. And there are many ways to do that. There's psychotherapy. And I think that during midlife, if we are not in some kind of a transformational process, it's a very difficult thing to do. That's our kind of modern day mechanism for doing that. Meditation retreats, psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. There's a number of different approaches to this. And understanding that we're in a universal process that unfolds in a relatively predictable way. And I think most people don't realize that we're in that process. So we have to awaken to the fact, and that's what the labyrinth is about there. It shows that we're as we go through the seasons, we're in a universal process. And as we begin to awaken to that, we start to understand that there are different phases that we go through that have particular tasks that begin to open up. And again, if the culture doesn't have support for those tasks, then we need to sometimes look outside of the culture or to look, and I think that's why people come to Jungians and transpersonal psychologists and to Reiki practitioners and et cetera, is to look for other models that support these deepening dimensions. And I think particularly in the yogic realm, they have models for looking at what the eldering is about. And they refer to elders as sannyasis. Mm-hmm. And so there is actually a sannyasi phase in the Hindu culture.
Great job. Thank you for being on Guys Guys Radio. A lot of best of luck with the book and the work you're doing, which is so important. Thank you.
You're quite welcome, and it's always a pleasure.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, what a fascinating conversation with Dr. Lakritz, Dr. Ken, about really aging. And we talked about so many different subjects today, but it's all about how we can kind of really figure out who we are before it's too late. And there's some of the practices about individuation and shadow work and meditation and all the things that help us get to a point where instead of just getting old, we become eldering and we become beacons of information and teaching and education for the next generations coming along. But we're not just tossed aside. As you know, our culture kind of has a narrative where they assign us roles at certain ages. And pretty much at a certain point, they say, okay, time for you to move over. But with people living longer and longer lives, the model doesn't work. The framework has to change. Putting that aside, it's all about going inside and really rediscovering who you are. And you can't let the external tell you who you are. You've got to go inside to figure out who you are. So with Dr. Ken, we talked about Jungian psychology. We talked about individuation, shadow work, eldering, how to transform really from from romantic relationships into more conscious partnering. We talked about ego and so much more. It's just a lot of stuff, the different stages of life. And a lot of it is guidance as to how we can begin the process of going inside to really fully realize who we've always been. And that's what Dr. Ken's work and his book is all about. So I did my best to kind of bring this thing to a framework where everybody could understand and relate to some of these concepts. Because when you get into Jungian psychology, there's a lot to chew on. So I hope you enjoyed our conversation. I think Dr. Ken's terrific. He's doing great work. So check out his book, Remembering Self. Ken Lakritz. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show. And until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.